And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. What's up, and welcome in to the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. It is Monday, November 30th, week 12, just about behind us. We are getting ready for week 13, the final week of most fantasy football regular seasons. We don't want to totally shun all you Week 17 championship people out there, especially since we've got one of you right here on this show, Brandon Funston. What's up, man? How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. I feel like every week just prepares me more and more for Week 17, so I think we'll be okay this year.
Definitely, right? It's a rolling season of 17 weeks. I didn't introduce myself. I am Michael Beller. Joining me and Brandon, as we do every single Monday, is Jake Seeley. Jake, what's going on this Monday?
It's a fun, crazy, insane week. Let me ask you guys, though, something. Is 3 out of 5 or 2 out of 5 close? Is that close, in your opinion?
What, 3 out of 5 or 2 out of 5?
Yeah.
I mean, I just...
When I say, I want to see somebody who faced Deshaun Watson... Antonio Gibson, Derrick Henry, Tyreek Hill, and Will Fuller, and people send me a lineup with two of those guys and say, this is close to what you asked for. Do people not understand what close is?
The bar for close there is 4.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
These are the people that play with kickers.
Yeah. Yeah. You need 4 there. I play with kickers. What's that supposed to mean? You need 4. 5, obviously, is what you asked for. 4 is close. 3 or less, you know, good try, I suppose.
I mean,
I don't know if you guys are like me, though. I don't always go and check who I'm playing the week, that I'm playing.
I almost never do.
So then I'm always kind of looking through my fingers as I click to open up the matchup, mid-Sunday to see if I've taken that bullet or not.
Tyreek Hill anywhere?
Yeah, exactly.
It was a crazy day. We were talking about it before we started recording here. You had a lot of nothing. It seemed like everyone either gave you a blah day or one of the craziest individual games that we have ever
seen. Well, that's what I said about your boy, Beller. I said, with how the day's going, Trubisky is either going to throw 3 interceptions and fumble one or throw for 350 yards and 4 touchdowns. He almost did both.
Yeah, right. He really almost did both. I mean, at the end of the day, it was a very useful fantasy game out of Mitch Trubisky with the 3 touchdowns. Nowhere near that good of a real life game, but hey, fantasy, we'll take the production where we get it. And we got
this is what I was saying. The Bears just needed to go full Jameis Winston with Trubisky, and that's
they
on
really
game on.
Just embrace that. I hope they embrace that for the rest of the season, especially the teams where I have Allen Robinson. Definitely hope that they just embrace that sort of team for the remainder of the season. We did have some guys that we should get into here. We did have some guys who fell in between those two extremes, and those are the guys who I think provided us with the most interesting fodder for the remainder of the season. The first of those that I want to get into is Austin Eckler, you guys, someone we talked about on our Sunday morning show, the Athletic Fantasy Cheat Sheet. Be sure to check us out the remainder of the season, 11 a.m. Eastern on all of our internet channels. Eckler, we were talking about, we know he's going to be back. Is he going to be back in the way that we expect him to be? And he was, you guys, 14 carries for 44 yards, 16 targets for Austin Eckler in this game. Obviously, the script of this game had something to do with that. Caught 11 of them for 85 yards. But you look at that workload, you look at the rest of the Chargers backs, they combined for 8 carries. This backfield, without question, belongs to Austin Eckler. So, Jake, I'll just put out this flat, easy question for you. How excited are we about Eckler for the rest of the year?
100 out of 100. It was surprising yesterday, and this isn't, I say this a lot. This isn't like a victory lap. I was surprised at the amount of people they were saying, thanks for ranking him inside the top 15. Thanks for what I was like. Again, it goes back to what we said on the show yesterday. It's like, if I have him, I'm starting him over everybody that I could potentially find unless you're a locked in RB1. And that included the Clyde Edwards-Alaires of the world. So like, it's Austin Eckler. Yes, there is the risk that these guys only get 5 touches in their first game back. But 9 out of 10 times when we're talking about somebody of this level, the teams throw them right back out there and use them a ton. And I didn't check all the way down the sheet. I was kind of skimming it because I was busy this morning. Are we talking about Raheem Mostert? Yes, we are talking about Raheem Mostert. So we'll save that. But a very similar conversation there. And you had, like I said, 100 out of 100. If you were tentative, you can't be now. Like, there's no holding back anything of putting him in your lineup as a must start. And I'm talking about must start as in he's in your lineup no matter what.
Yeah. So if you watched him, he's definitely not 100% Eckler, but it didn't really matter. He got 16 targets, which is ridiculous, you know. So I think the good here is that he has upside just in the fact that he's going to get in better football shape and get back and be a little bit more explosive. The running looked like he was just a little bit labored. But I also think they probably won't throw to him nearly as much. I mean, the takeaway here is that the Chargers offense looked terrible. And they'll probably have to change things up, but what?
You know what somebody said to me, Brandon, yesterday?
What?
Tweeted out a GIF of John Wick saying, "I'm thinking I'm back," about Austin Eckler. That's all it was. And somebody said, "But this offense looks terrible. They need to stop taking the ball out of Justin Herbert's hands." He attempted 52 effing passes.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Take it out of his hands. I will say I agree with you with one thing, Brandon. I don't know if that's where you're about to go, but the Joshua Kelly usage made no sense. Like, they were using him in Eckler-type situations. So maybe to your point, that's where Austin Eckler's maybe 90% of what he is.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I mean, I'm not really making a point about Eckler. I think he's totally back and fine. And if he loses some targets, big deal. You're not going to get 16 every week. What are you going to get? 10, 9, 8? We'll live with that.
Right.
You know, and if the rushing upside, you know, improves, then it's fine. I think Herbert was maybe just due for a bad game, and that's what we saw. But yeah, I'm giddy about Eckler being back as well. So really nothing more to say about that.
Are we happy that that's a bad game for Herbert?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
3-16-1. That's a bad game for him at this point.
Yeah, I think you'll absolutely take that as a bad game. As someone who I always thought I would always take whatever their bad game is and whatever was Alvin Kamara. And now I'm starting to get a little concerned about that, guys, after two games in the Taysom Hill starting era that we've seen. This past game, an easy win, a bizarre game. We knew that was going to be the case going in with Kendall Hinton being the, quote, quarterback for the Broncos. But not worried about what the Broncos did. Very worried about what the Saints did. Alvin Kamara had 11 carries for 54 yards, just one catch for -2 yards. Now in two games in which Taysom Hill has been the starter, he has 2 targets, 1 catch, -2 receiving yards. Meanwhile, Taysom Hill got 2 more rushing touchdowns. One was from 1 yard out. One was from 2 yards out. Hello, those belong to Alvin Kamara. Latavius Murray, significantly involved again. Part of the plan, part just the way the game went, with the Saints having the game pretty much in hand from the word go. 19 carries for 124 yards and 2 touchdowns. I think it's time to get worried. Last week I was willing to say it was an anomaly, and we still did see a very efficient game from Kamara, really in both of these games, and he got in the end zone last week. But after two games with him seeding inside the 5-yard line carries to Taysom Hill and having virtually no receiving game role, I'm a little nervous about Alvin Kamara for the rest of the season. Are you joining me on that, Brandon?
Yeah, and I just was editing Michael Salfino's scouting review column that he does, and he brought up a good point that, you know, running the RPO kind of offensive style, it's more conducive to a Latavius Murray type that can pound between the tackles, and we kind of saw that play out. And if Taysom Hill is not going to be dumping the ball off to Alvin Kamara in the passing game, then yeah, we have a big problem here. If you're a Kamara manager, you can't get Drew Brees back fast enough. And look at New Orleans is getting lucky, because the slate in which Drew Brees went out is Atlanta, and then it's Denver with no quarterback, and then it's Atlanta again. And we're not going to get the validation that Taysom Hill, you know, is not a viable winning quarterback in normal situations. And, you know, week 14, if he's still around at Philadelphia, that could be a reckoning for this offense just in general. But, you know, right now it's looking like Drew Brees is week 15. Could be a rough, you know, kind of low upside run here for Alvin Kamara until Brees is back.
That's the concern, is still Drew Brees comes back, because the rushing is the same as what Alvin Kamara always gets. You know, it's usually around a dozen, and I think the only time that he even top 14 was way back in week 4, and that was against the Lions. And was Latavius Murray used much in that game? I don't remember. You probably do, Beller. You probably remember every single play that he was on.
I don't know.
So, but yeah, so the rushing, that's not the concern. And it wasn't like he was the goal line guy. But yeah, of course, Taysom Hill's, similarly to what we keep comparing him to as Cam Newton, is that's a concern for the backfield of anybody who plays with that kind of running back or wide. I was about to say running back, wide receiver, quarterback. Good God. Too many of these situations going around, hitting, screwing up everything. But it's the passing game. I think he's now firmly inside RB2 conversation, not even the RB2, not even RB1. But because you're only talking about a dozen touches per game, and the majority of them all coming in the rushing side of things. So, yeah, you still have to put him out there. I don't see anybody who has him that can bench him at this point. Maybe if you have Eckler coming back and you bought low. I can't imagine a scenario where you're still benching Kamara, but until Breeze does get back, as Brandon said, maybe hopefully he returns a week 14 like he wants to. It's going to be bad news.
And one stat to drive home how different things have been for Alvin Kamara, and then we can move on here. His low score in half PPR scoring with Drew Brees healthy was 13.4 points. His average score with Drew Brees, 23.66. 2 games with Taysom Hill, he's giving you 10.5 and 5.7 half PPR points. It has been a much different world for Alvin Kamara with Taysom Hill as the starter in New Orleans. Jake, you brought up Raheem Mostert, so let's jump to the 49ers. Yeah. We saw them get healthy-ish, right? We know no George Kittle, no Jimmy Garoppolo, but the return of Mostert, Deebo Samuel, and hey, we can throw Jeff Wilson in that win over the Rams, 23-20, a big win for the San Francisco 49ers. The stat lines, Mostert, 16 carries, 43 yards, touchdown, 2 targets, caught them both. They evened out for 0 yards. Jeff Wilson also got 12 carries, 43 yards. Deebo Samuel, the big game, 11 grabs on 13 targets for 133 yards. I think we all know the answer to this, but let's just drive it home. Raheem Mostert, Deebo Samuel, these guys are in your lineup every week the remainder of the season, correct, Jake?
100%. And we talked about that on the yesterday show too, and we were asking this question, and that's what I said, is that we've seen from Shanahan the only running back he's ever let us trust is Raheem Mostert. When it's Raheem Mostert's on the field, he's his guy, 100%. And yesterday, in his first game back, I pulled up the numbers, 16 carries, which was 48.5% of the backfield carries. Also had 2 targets, didn't catch either one of them. But Wilson had 12, a decent amount of usage. But again, it's his first game back. Mostert hadn't played since week 6 when he went 17 for 65 against the Rams, which is a tough matchup. So 16 carries and 2 targets in your first game back against the Rams, it's Mostert's backfield. There's somebody else will be sprinkled in. It might be less Jeff Wilson. It might be more Jerick McKinnon, depending on the matchup. But we can feel good until, you know, as long as Mostert's healthy, it's his backfield.
Oh, good. You left me some room to talk about Deebo.
Oh, yeah.
Samuel,
I mean, I just tweeted out I love Deebo yesterday with a GIF from Friday. So, I mean, you can have that.
Gosh, I've been waiting a long time for Deebo to get back in a lot of my leagues, and man, it was glorious. But listen, I mean, you look at the rest of the slate, I don't care if you see a tough matchup, Tre'Davious White, you know, coming up or whatever, you just face the toughest, you know, pass defense for a wide receiver, and Deebo Samuel did it as the clear number one with Brandon Ayuk out. Jalen Ramsey, everybody, you know, pretty much knows Deebo Samuel is the one guy there that's going to hurt him, and he had 11 catches and 133 yards, so it's game on. I mean, he's a yak monster. Those quick slants and stuff, he's just so dangerous, and he can just, you know, he's so hard to take down that I just don't see how you consider benching him or not playing him. I think he's at least in the every week wide receiver 2 mix, but maybe even that's selling him a little bit short.
Yeah, I think he's right there too, and I think that's someone who easily is startable or should be started for the rest of the season. Someone who's more in the startable and maybe trending in that same direction. One of the guys who most caught my eye on Sunday was Jarvis Landry, someone who we've been waiting for quite a bit this season and just really hasn't been healthy since that offseason hip surgery. We saw him, I think, turn a corner in the Browns' win over the Jaguars in Week 12. 11 targets, caught 8 of them for 143 yards and a touchdown. Day could have been even bigger if Baker Mayfield hadn't missed him in a couple of spots where he got open. You have a pretty, I don't know, maybe middle of the road remaining schedule at Tennessee, then Baltimore, then at Giants, then at Jets. That's the next 4 games for the Browns. And without Odell Beckham, we know someone's got to be the number one receiver there. Landry really hasn't been healthy. It feels like he cemented himself or announced himself healthy and the number one receiver for the Browns going forward. Jake, what do you think that looks like for him for the rest of the season?
Not like this ever again. I just think this was a no, I really do. Like, I think it was a product of the situation. It just was the day where he was the guy that was getting open most consistently. I think that there were some opportunities left on the field if you were watching too. And mostly because you guys know I'm a Hodge fan and I was watching it. Don't they both, is it 82 and 12 between Higgins and Hodge? And it's always, that's why I was watching so closely, trying to figure out which one was wide open right. And he was ignoring. But that why I chuckled is because you said miss some throws and he also missed some wide open players. And it's not like I'm saying, hey, you should have went to Hodge or you should have went to Hooper more. But you watched that he just still has tunnel vision at times. And for Landry's sake, fortunately for him, his tunnel vision was for Landry yesterday. You mentioned it. Titans, yeah, you feel good next week. But Ravens, Giants, those two are considerable matchups that you have to be worried about at this point. The Jets, when you get in that championship week, you feel great about. But those two games in a row, I just don't know. I could see this being Landry top 25 against the Titans, not even relevant for 2 weeks, and then back to top 25 against the Jets. I just think it was more of a product of the matchup.
Yeah, I mean, Jacksonville had tons of injuries in the secondary as well. It was a really great
Aren't
matchup.
They in, like for... third string corners.
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, I just think, you know, yeah, I think the injuries have been a thing for him this year, and I think he can feel better about it. If he just goes back to being the 4 to 6 catch, 60 to 80 yard weekly kind of safe play, I think that's good. What we haven't seen that this year, and that's something that he was one of the most consistent for that, you know, over the course of his career among all receivers. So I think you can feel better about him just giving you something, you know, high floor viability week in and week out. And that's kind of all I'm looking for. I'm not looking for Jarvis Landry to give you 8, 143 and a touchdown. That's just not really who he normally is anyways.
Can you guys even name the second quarter that was out there for Jacksonville yesterday?
No, and I watched a good chunk of the game.
Too. Luke Barku. L-U-Q. I only know that because I looked it up last night.
There you go. I think it's important to keep in mind with respect to Jarvis Landry, and then we'll move on, that the worst season of his career was his rookie year with Miami 2014. He caught 84 passes for 758 yards and 5 touchdowns. So we've never seen a nothing season from Jarvis Landry, true. The way that he was pacing this year. So I do think it's somewhere. Obviously, we're not going to expect 8 for 140 and a touchdown, but I do think that at least we're going to get the guy who Brandon referenced, the 4 to 6 catch, 60 to 80 yard, you know, one-third, 1.4 touchdowns per game sort of guy for the rest of the season.
And the way and you could feel a little bit. But you could feel a little bit more optimistic against the Giants because the majority of his damage was out of the slot, and that's not Bradbury, so maybe. But again, the Giants have just been stronger overall. It's similar to the Panthers, better than people realize because of the perception of the team.
Right, absolutely. And hey, first place New York Giants now going in to week 13.
These idiots are going
speaking
division.
Of maybe better than people realize because of the perception, how about Kirk Cousins? He's QB14 on the season, a little worse than that in points per game, but he's been one of the hottest quarterbacks over the middle third of the season here. His last six games, 1,636 yards, better than 9 yards per attempt, 15 touchdowns. He's got three touchdown games in that stretch, just 4 interceptions, a remaining schedule of Jacksonville at Tampa, Chicago at New Orleans, so looks pretty tough, but we did just see Chicago get totally run over by the Packers and Aaron Rodgers on Sunday Night Football in Week 12, a team that can't keep running on defense only. What's our trust level for Kirk Cousins for the rest of the season? It just feels like this guy is unfairly maligned year in and year out. He did it without Adam Thielen yesterday, gave you another 3-touchdown game. I mean, where are we at on him, Brandon, for the rest of the year?
Well, I'm probably going to have to start using him as my new Rodney Dangerfield over Derek Carr. I've always kind of been trying to trump up Cousins as well as someone who's being disrespected, because he does always kind of finish in that mid-teens range at the fantasy quarterback position. He always gives you serviceable numbers, and I just think, you know, he's added Justin Jefferson to the mix, but they're such a good run team, and the ability to play off of that is going to always be able to work for him. He's going to have efficiency. He's just not going to always throw a lot, and that's kind of the problem. You know, you look at his game logs, there's a lot of low 20s pass attempt games, and it's kind of, you know, like I said about Cleveland, when they can run, they will run, and that's going to lower his ceiling a bit. But I think as far as serviceability goes, that's always been Kirk Cousins' game.
Yeah, I think the problem with Kirk Cousins is that we know it's Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's very similar. It can be this good, and it can be this good for a while, but similar to the Indianapolis game in week 2, we know when it goes to hell, it really goes to hell. And that's the concern. You know, even the game against Green Bay, no interceptions, but only 160 and a touchdown on 14 attempts. They don't need him all the time. You know, if Dalvin Cook maybe is banged up, at, you know, maybe this week you see a little bit more, but maybe that hurts the offense more than it helps him. I don't know what it's saying. I'm not throwing him aside, but similar, you know what? Similar to Derek Carr, similar to Tannehill and Fitzpatrick, all these guys are in the same conversation. Yeah, you ride it while it's hot, but any week while you're riding it, be ready for the roller coaster to come off the track. That's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely true, but I just felt like we needed to get him in here because he's been, again, another one of those guys who, right, better than the perception that has surrounded
him. So in week 13, he's going to throw three interceptions, and Derek Carr is going to throw 350 and three touchdowns.
Against Jacksonville? Against that Jacksonville defense we just talked about? That's who he's got in week 13.
Yeah, then never mind.
Maybe in week 14, I mean, when you finally buy in and then you start him at Tampa in the first round of the playoffs.
No, that's what I'm saying. Would that and not be anything more 2020 than that as he goes belly up against Jacksonville and then goes
well, he might throw 14 times against Jacksonville. I mean,
that would be more the concern than anything. Another one of these big Dalvin Cook games. We saw Nick Chubb get going. I have to imagine Dalvin Cook is already excited for this matchup next week against the Jaguars. But let's put some respect on Kirk Cousins' name as we have just done right here.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, guys, it's a light week on the waiver wire this week. I do want to mention Devontae Booker. Josh Jacobs left the Raiders' loss to the Falcons in the third quarter with an ankle injury. We don't yet know, as we are recording this, how serious it is. Hard to know just how serious. Was it a serious injury? Was it the fact that this game was totally out of hand by the time Jacobs got hurt? You've got a remaining schedule here of Jets, Indy, Chargers, and Miami the next 4 weeks for the Las Vegas Raiders. Devontae Booker has been the clear backup to Jacobs for a couple of weeks running here now. Jake, is this a situation where, assuming we don't have any new information, or obviously if we do get information that Jacobs is going to miss time, you just emptying whatever fab you have remaining to get Booker on your squad?
Yeah, well, Rappaport, shortly before we started this show, said that it looked worse than what it was, so we're still waiting on the test, as you said, so people might already know by the time you're listening, but the Booker situation is, so it's two. There's two answers to this. The one answer is no, because it should have already happened. He shouldn't be sitting out there. The second part is, if he is, absolutely. And then, actually, here, I'll give you a bonus third part. I'm sorry, everybody, because my home league's trade deadline was last week, and I traded for him. So there you go. Boom. That's exactly what happened.
Traded for Josh Jacobs?
Yeah, I traded for Josh Jacobs. Yeah, it was a chase for the playoffs. And, yep, traded because it's a keeper auction league. I traded away, who did I trade? Oh, J.K. Dobbins and somebody at a wide receiver for him. And, yep, it's my fault, everybody.
You ruined it all.
I did.
Hey, let's so I think that's a pretty good sum up of where Devontae Booker is. Let's take a quick look at wide receivers here, and I want to look at this position through the lens of the New York Jets that are likely on waiver wires. Breshad Perriman and Denzel Mims, they both turned in quietly useful games again in week 12. They both had 8 targets. They both caught 4 of them. Perriman turned his 4 receptions into 79 yards. Mims, his 4 into 67 yards. You've got a relatively friendly remaining schedule. They got the Raiders in week 13. They're in Seattle week 14. They're in LA to take on the Rams in week 15. And then they return home week 16 to play the Browns. I mean, with the way we've seen this offense going, it's going to be a team that throws the ball quite a bit for the remainder of the season. Brandon, we'll go to you here. Any interest in these two Jets as, you know, potential long-range receivers who actually do make some sort of impact in the fantasy playoffs?
I don't know. I mean, look at Sam Darnold. He hasn't thrown a touchdown pass in his last 4 games. It's low upside. It's bench insurance. This is probably as good as you can hope for. 79 yards from Perriman, 67 from Mims. We know there'll be games where Jameson Crowder and Darnold click, and probably against my Seattle Seahawks in a couple weeks. But if you're putting a Jet receiver out there, you know what you're going to get, or what you know, concern is there. I mean, it's just there's high volatility. And now we're talking about three viable Jets receivers in this environment. I mean, I don't know. It's a risky game going into your fantasy playoffs. But if you need, you know, you need some bench depth, I don't have any problem with it. But hopefully, if you're going into the playoffs, you have a little bit better arsenal that you don't have to be forced to play these guys.
All right, Jake, you wanna differ in any way, or should we move on to what we got next up?
No, just viable was a little bit of a generous word there.
All right, we got some other running backs I want to talk about, but we're going to save that for an all running back section a little later in the show. Let's look at another team. How about the Tennessee Titans? What I put down on our show sheet, the quote, tough matchup part of their schedule is over. Their last four games, they've played Chicago, Indy, Baltimore, and Indy. They went 3-1 in that stretch. And again, you know, Chicago's not a great team, but a good defense that they went up against in that game. And so we're looking at four straight games against well above average defenses for this team. In those four games, just going to rattle off the stats for the four primary fantasy guys on this team. You had Ryan Tannehill give you 785 yards, 7.7 yards per attempt, 6 touchdowns, just 1 pick, what we've come to expect from Ryan Tannehill in his time in Tennessee. 11 carries, 50 yards, 1 touchdown on the ground. Derrick Henry, he did exactly what Derrick Henry does. 482 yards, 3 100-yard games, 4 touchdowns. The only team that got the better of him was the Bears. A.J. Brown, 13 catches on 26 targets, 282 yards, and 3 touchdowns. And hey, if you're in a league where you get points for that return touchdown that he had yesterday, all the better. And then Corey Davis, you know, pretty workman-like production in these four games. 13 catches, 19 targets, 250 yards. Basically, every single one of these guys in this tough stretch of schedule delivered as you expect them to deliver. And now the remainder of the season, Cleveland at Jacksonville, Detroit at Green Bay. We know what you're doing with Henry and A.J. Brown. Are you also feeling good about Tannehill and Corey Davis within their range of expectations? What do you got on these guys, Jake?
Not feeling good, mostly because the four defenses they're facing, only Cleveland is middle of the pack against the run. The other three, Jacksonville, Detroit, and Green Bay, are top 8 favorable matchups, including the number 1 most favorable and the number 3 most favorable matchups in Detroit and Green Bay for the championship weeks. And what we know about Green Bay is you got Jaire Alexander. I'm not worried about Detroit's pass defense or Jacksonville's, but Cleveland's is decent, better above average. So it's more so, I say all that because it's just going to be Henry season like it is every year when we get to December. And, you know, the December narrative is a narrative, but the schedule is 100% in favor of that narrative. And people are going to say, see, told you about December. No, it's just Derrick Henry wears down defenses. Defenses are tired in December. And now he's got the most glorious 4-game stretch of a running back you could ever see in December. So why I say I don't feel great about Tannehill and Davis is because they're not needed. You could just do Derrick Henry and then some A.J. Brown and just run through December, and that's why.
Yeah, really quickly, just the Baltimore and Indy games for Derrick Henry, both of those teams lost 2 starters on the defensive line, including their best guy. So that he got a little bit of, you know, wind at his back with that. But I mean, the schedule upcoming for him is not not to be worried about. I'll say it's kind of like Minnesota with Kirk Cousins. I mean, it's like it's going to be low volume for Tannehill. And we saw A.J. Brown make that work with big play touchdowns. Mm-hmm. But that's going to hurt Corey Davis more because he's not an A.J. Brown type. He needs a little bit more volume, and I just don't see it. And especially those last three games, Jacksonville, Detroit, Green Bay, Tennessee is probably not going to have to throw the ball a lot. Maybe the Green Bay game if Aaron Rodgers.
Green Bay could definitely push them to score.
Yeah.
But yeah, could definitely push them to score.
Games where I would concern.
You just worry about whether Jaire Alexander spends time on Davis or A.J. Brown. I'd be obviously less concerned about A.J. Brown. But, dude, it is like, and he's out there running like for a freaking cosign on that route where he scored the touchdown out there.
With the Saints and Broncos game this week had a runtime of like 2 hours and 39 minutes. Browns Titans, is that going to be in that range with the way those teams can run the ball as effectively as they can?
Honestly,
against the fronts they're going to be
facing? Might just be Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, Derrick Henry, right? And this, I mean, we're watching the second half of another game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's going to be like the fastest game between two good teams that we've seen since like 1982.
The Browns are solidly in the playoffs right now.
Oh, comfortably. And you look at their schedule, I mean, I think they're going to have a playoff berth wrapped up. It's not going to take them till week 17 to get there. And you know who else is maybe not solidly in the playoffs, but in the playoffs right now? New York Giants, first place in the NFC East. But they are now dealing with what is a crushing injury to Daniel Jones, suffered a hamstring injury. Colt McCoy, the backup there. How concerned are you if Daniel Jones misses time for the fantasy-relevant skill players? Wayne Gallman, I mean, you know, say what you will about Wayne Gallman. He has been very effective fantasy player for, you know, more than a month now. Evan Ingram, we saw get a big game in Week 12. Without Daniel Jones, how concerned should we be about these Giants, Jake?
Not at all. Because Colt McCoy is not that big of a drop-off to Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones, the fantasy relevance here is the quarterback alone. Like, you're not starting Colt McCoy. The reason you're starting Daniel Jones in some leagues is for what Nando loves him for, is the rushing upside, is because he continues to run. Yeah, so without Daniel Jones, you turn to Colt McCoy. He's going to be fine. Colt McCoy is not an enormous drop-off from what Daniel Jones was doing as a passing quarterback. That's my takeaway here is Evan Ingram's still going to get his. Sterling Shepard's still going to get his. Our guy, I always screw up his last name, Dan Dugan, finally got it right while I was thinking about it, was saying that there might be something wrong with Darius Slayton because this is now 2 weeks in a row where he hasn't even been on the field the entire time, so he might be masking an injury or something like that. But Ingram and Shepard and Gallman's still going to be the lead option, and all he does is score touchdowns now because he's the constant goal line. They pulled the Nick Chubb. They went for it four straight times, and he got it on fourth down yesterday.
That was awesome.
Yeah, the big three, quote-unquote the big three, that being Ingram, Shepard, and Gallman, I'm not worried about it. If Slayton can get out there, that would be the one concern, is maybe the arm difference, but it's not like Daniel Jones was amazing at downfield accuracy anyway, so I'm not that concerned, honestly.
Yeah, nothing more to add. I was going to say the Slayton's the one that you would worry about, just because, mm-hmm. I mean, I think Colt McCoy's YPA over his last 100 attempts is like 6.5. It's not good, so you would think that short and intermediate range guys would be okay, like Jake said, and Darius Slayton might have more of a problem than just Colt McCoy, so we'll see.
Yeah, it is crazy how Daniel Jones has just taken no step forward.
Darius Slayton was the other part of that trade. There you go. Boom. You're welcome, everybody.
Oh, beautiful. We brought it full circle and figured out what Jake gave away for the pleasure of jinxing Josh.
No. He's the one that came back, too. I got Slayton back in the deal, too. Yeah.
Well, beautiful. So you've got neither of them, then.
If everybody out there, I'm just going to start telling you my trade so you can trade away the guys I brought in.
Stay away. Stay away at all costs. All right, here's that running back section that I was talking about. We got a lot of running backs I want to get to. We'll try to get through them relatively quickly because we've talked about some of these guys quite a bit. I'm going back to the Jonathan Taylor train here, guys, and I'll explain why. Jonathan Taylor obviously did not play in the Colts' loss to the Titans because he's on the COVID-19 reserve list, but I call this game an endorsement in absentia for Jonathan Taylor because he saw Nyheim Hines get 10 carries for 29 yards, Jordan Wilkins 6 carries for 22 yards. They were in a negative game script pretty much all game here, but still, neither of these guys ran away with anything impressive in the Colts' backfield. It makes me feel like we have an even better chance of seeing that confirmation game from Jonathan Taylor when he returns. We expect that to be in Week 13 against Houston. And you look at this schedule the rest of the year. Houston, Vegas, Houston, Pittsburgh. That Pittsburgh game scares you. Those first three certainly do not. So how are we feeling? Once again, checking in, our weekly talk about Jonathan Taylor. How are we feeling about him here, Jake?
I was going to let Brandon go for this one because I went so long on the Giants. I'd say,
all right, how are we feeling on this, Brandon?
I'll just put it here. I'll give you the quick version. No different.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're right. I think the endorsement in absentia is a great call. I mean, Jordan Wilkins is the one you'd have to worry about, right? Because this was basically the hierarchy when Taylor went out. Taylor was one, Hines two, Wilkins three, and neither of them stepped up, but Wilkins only got 6 carries with Jonathan Taylor out of the game. That's great, you know? So you talk about the schedule, it's ideal. Jonathan Taylor should come back and get the first opportunity to be the hot hand guy, quote unquote, and against Houston. Man, you couldn't ask for a better matchup. Vegas and Houston again. Like Pittsburgh, a little bit of a concern, but that's a championship game. You'll deal with that. You'll take that problem if you can get it.
This is what you've been waiting for all season with Jonathan Taylor. Fits and starts, more fits than there have been starts, but man, I think we're going to see a nice little run here out of Jonathan Taylor after what we did not see Nyheim Hines or Jordan Wilkins do with the opportunity they had against the Titans. Let's go to our next favorite guy in this discussion, Ronald Jones. 9 carries for 66 yards. He had a 37-yard rushing TD on what was his only target in the game. Meanwhile, Leonard Fournette doing what Leonard Fournette has done all season. 3 carries, 10 yards, 3 catches, 10 yards. The fact that they used Ronald Jones at all in the passing game, I think, is a big arrow up for him. This game obviously got out of hand with Tyreek Hill setting records in the first quarter, and the Buccaneers basically had to be in full-on pass mode. I know that we are never going to trust. We're never going to use that word with Ronald Jones or any Bruce Arians back until something changes. But is Ronald Jones a default starter? Are you assuming that he is in your starting lineup? No, Jake?
No, there's too many options. The only two, look, actually, you can't this week because he's on a bye. Ha ha.
On a bye.
But after that, there is zero, 100%, whichever way you want to skew it, difference. I have him on that team that's hopefully in the playoffs, and I have James Conner, a potentially banged up Josh Jacobs, and I can't think of the other third running back. Oh, James Robinson. But those other two. I would start a banged up Josh Jacobs and a banged up James Conner before I put Ronald Jones in my playoff lineup. I'm not doing it no matter what. I have to think if you're in the playoffs, because again, you don't get them this week. So if you're in the playoffs, you have to have better options.
I will say that here's what I will say. He will be in my top 20 running backs in every remaining game that he plays through week 16.
No. Are you are you doing
Minnesota,
that because
Atlanta and Detroit are
there? It might be
schedule.
19 or 20, but he was right there this past week.
Are you
week
doing
as well.
It as the DJ Moore where I said I'm just ranking him 20 and I don't care anymore, or are you doing that because you legitimately think he's top 20?
Sort of a little bit more the DJ Moore, but I'm gonna trust my eyes on this. We're 12 weeks into the season. Ronald Jones is a more talented player than Leonard Fournette.
Nobody's denying that.
I trust my eyes when I see who's the coach
on the sideline.
But I think, here's the deal. Leonard Fournette is not giving them that much juice in the passing game. I just don't know that they're going to continue with this. Leonard Fournette is our passing down running back, and Ronald Jones is our running back. I think Rojo's kind of starting to infringe on Fournette's job there and becoming more of the fuller featured running back. And with those matchups,
okay,
I think that's going to continue.
Not trying to got you, like whatever. Like serious question here. What's the difference between this and earlier in the season when we played the same dance, and also when Leonard Fournette was hurt? And I only asked that, Brandon, because that was the point that you brought up earlier this year about we've already done this with Jonathan Taylor. You said he's already got his 20 carries and we've already gone around this circle. So I'm not saying, again, I'm not trying to catch you being like, ha ha ha. I want to know the difference, why it's different for you, because it feels the same to me.
Well, to me, it's like there was a point a couple weeks ago when Rojo fumbled that ball early and they stuck with him and he went gangbusters. And it's that Leonard Fournette had three drops last week. And I said, oh, I bet you we'll see a little bit more of Ronald Jones in the passing game. And then Ronald Jones went out and made a play in the passing game where he made that move along the sideline that, God, Leonard Fournette can only dream of making a play like that. Like, and I just think that there is just going to be this preponderance of the evidence that Bruce Arians is going to say, you know what? We've been shaky. We're going to get our best players on the field for this remaining slate, and it's not a good slate. I mean, they're playing a bunch of softies, so this could be a whole bunch
of
Ronald Jones.
I mean, I think it's the same, and I see. I mean, it was two targets, one catch, and everybody just remembers the one catch and that.
Yeah,
touchdown.
But the one catch was an incredibly impressive play.
But this is the same thing everybody says all the time. It's like, are we really going that hard into Cam Akers and trusting him when the bulk of his carry, like the bulk of his day, came on that one carry? Like, that's, you could do it with Zach Moss. Zach Moss was having a miserable day outside of that one giant carry. So again, I'm not saying you're wrong, but you know, for everybody out there listening, if you want to side with Brandon, if you want to side with me, but this is why I'm not doing it. I'm not playing this game. Leonard Fournette still got three targets in this game. I don't disagree with you on the Ronald Jones talent. I didn't disagree with anybody on the Jonathan Taylor talent. It's just, it feels very similar to me. So I'm on the same. I'm not putting Ronald
Jones
out there.
I'm just saying that I will rank him as a top 20 running back. He's like, what is he, like RB 12 or 13 in points per game on the year or something like that? I'm like, I'm not really, I know he's, you know, he's, there's volatility there, but I just don't know. I think it's a DJ Moore thing where you can't really drop him too far down because you
So that's what I'll do. Then it's Pat Mayo to steal from him. He is in worse place for me. You can rank him wherever the hell you want. He's in worse place.
half point PPR scoring, Ronald Jones is the RB 9.
I know, but the last five games, 6.6, 3.3, 26, 2.4, 17. Like, that's DJ Moore is a good comparison. Again, that's why I'm not doing it. I don't want to sit there in week 14 and watch that 3.3 hit my lineup.
All right. Well, do you want to talk about Cam Akers since you brought his name up, since you invoked his name?
No, that's 100. Like, the people read my waiver column. They know that they are in Patriots games, and this doesn't change anything for me with Cam Akers. You want to put him out there?
What?
Be my guest.
What would your running back situation have to look like to want to start Cam Akers?
My RB1 would have to be Ronald Jones.
I think your running back situation would have to include the two guys that you want to talk about next, and then you might consider Cam Akers.
I mean, right? I mean, they're not going to go away. Daryl Henderson's not going away. Malcolm Brown's not going away. You want to believe that you see a guy make a play like Cam Akers did on that 61-yard carry, and like, all right, maybe he'll get a little bit more run. But it just doesn't feel like it's going to happen for him the way that things I do think are happening for Ronald Jones. Like Brandon said, the preponderance of the evidence has to be there that he is the best back. And he has built up some capital and some goodwill in Tampa in a way that Cam Akers hasn't, and hasn't had the opportunity, you know, in his defense to really do in L.A. So I understand why he doesn't quite fit in there, but I don't know. I would love to see a little bit. I think we'd all like to see a little bit more work for him. Probably not something that we are going to see. But yes, Brandon. You do the next two guys that we talked about here, Brian Hill and Frank Gore. People are going to be talking about it. Right? This is as bad of a week as it is for the waiver wire. People are still going to be thinking about these two guys on the waiver wire, even though Brian Hill got scooped up quite a bit with the fact that he was starting in place of Todd Gurley in week 12. He had 13 carries for 55 yards. Don't really worry about Ito Smith. Ito Smith did so much of his damage, including the touchdown, once that game was well out of hand. And Frank Gore, you know, he's still churning out these 70-yard from scrimmage, 80-yard from scrimmage games where he has that foundation. If he punches in a touchdown, you're talking about an RB2 day. So if you had to have one of these guys for the rest of the season, which some people out there might have to, who would you rather have here, Brandon?
Well, do we know how long-term this Todd Gurley knee injury is? I mean,
we do not, but it's a Todd Gurley knee injury.
Right, exactly. And this is kind of what we were worried about. I'm going to take Brian Hill, and he's probably going to have Ito Smith eating into his workload. But you look at Atlanta, they get 3.6 red zone attempts per game, and the Jets are last in the league at 2.2. There's just no touchdown upside for Frank Gore. There's the touchdown upside with Brian Hill. They might, you know, they might both be guys that turn out a bunch of 13 for 40, 50-yard games. But I'll take the guy that might have a chance to score a touchdown. And if he's taken over Todd Gurley's role, we've seen how that works out in terms of touchdown scoring in this Atlanta offense.
Yeah, I'm actually taking the opposite because my concern, and no, I did not rank him near Brian Hill. Brian Hill was like at 23, but Ito Smith was around 35, 40 for me. That's my concern is the Ito Smith, and it's not just the carries because I know some people argue, well, they're up and in control, so maybe it's not Ito Smith as much in the future. But even throw out the carries. 5 targets, 4 receptions, Brian Hill, 1 target, 0. Like, Ito Smith was already the passing game option in that game before it got out of control. I think this is a 50-50 split backfield based off of one game. This, again, I'm going before that game got out of control. I was watching a good amount of that because of Josh Jacobs, obviously. And the one thing I say, like, I hate that we're starting Frank Gore. I hate it. I mean, Adrian Peterson, I joked. I said, Adrian Peterson and Frank Gore are both inside the top 30 this week. What is 2020 doing to us? Like, but 18 carries. Nobody else had more than 2. And one of those people were Sam Darnold. That backfield is his. I know it's the Jets, but this is the one argument where I continue to go to a lot of times is I'm going to take the guaranteed volume when it's close. And in my opinion, this is close. You might not agree it's close, and that's where we would differ. But when I get the guaranteed volume, I'm taking it.
All right, guys, one more running back situation I want to talk about before we turn our eyes to the Week 13 stream. This is just something that, you know, I was just thinking about these two players, how they represent really polar opposites of the running back position in 2020. The first, the good James Robinson, a guy who pretty much no one except for our former colleague, Emery Hunt, check him out on CBS. The guy is great. Check him out on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. Knows the game inside and out, and he was beating the drum for James Robinson even before the Jaguars let go of Leonard Fournette, and then he was beating it very loudly once they did let go of Leonard Fournette. We all know what James Robinson has done this season. He is going to be on a lot of regular season champions, maybe on a lot of championship teams with the return on investment he has provided this year. The opposite end of that, Ezekiel Elliott, I think the truest bust of the 2020 season. At least Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, at least they have injuries to explain their failure to deliver on what their draft status was. Ezekiel Elliott has been out there all season and just frankly hasn't come anywhere near his expectations. So these two guys, the polar opposite, let's just take a fun little look forward into 2021. Who do you think's going first on draft day? Who you got here, Brandon? James Robinson or Zeke?
Oh, for 2021, I'm still going to go Zeke. I think Dak Prescott being back will be huge. An offensive line that comes back around will be huge. I think James Robinson for this year, for sure, easily. I mean, James Robinson's doing what we loved about Ezekiel Elliott, which is getting you 10-plus fantasy points and half PPR every week, practically, with like one exception. So... but for next year, I think it's back to Zeke. I would take a Dak Prescott offense over whatever, you know, Jacksonville ends up with, if it's Justin Fields or whoever. But I think that's going to be the thing that kind of keeps Robinson down below Elliott. And Elliott's just messed up in the head with this whole season. I mean, what is it? Five fumbles lost, a whole bunch of drops. I mean, he's just kind of, it seems like he's a little bit checked out or a little bit messed up with how everything's gone this year in Dallas. But I expect that coming into the next year, you know, he'll be in a different mindset.
Recency bias, too. I am with you on Zeke because through the first five games with Dak, and actually including the sixth game, the first game without Dak, you know how many touches Zeke had as a floor? 20. He had 20-plus in all of the six first games. He had 12-plus fantasy points in all of the first six games. He was RB1 through the first five games. And yes, some of it was touchdown reliant, but he also had 96 rushing, a buck 20 total. Like, he was fine. And then lost Zeke and everything went to crap. And for the fumbling thing, for everybody out there, I made the comparison last week. He's still averaging fewer fumbles per touch than Adrian Peterson did for his career. And Adrian Peterson is one of the best running backs of all time. Fumbles are overrated, but it's recency bias. And I recency bias for two reasons, because the fumbles and everything that happened in Washington was a letdown. But recency bias the opposite direction, because after week 11, everything was, oh, everything's fine. He's Zeke, 21 carries, 100 yards. I guess everything's fine. And yet we're back to the exact opposite. So you're right, Beller. It is a huge discussion, but it shouldn't be a huge discussion to the way that people are making it. They are close in next year's draft. They should both be first rounders, but I would still take Zeke with healthy Dak.
All right, yeah, fun look ahead for what's this? It's December basically here, so that was a look ahead about 8-9 months. Let's look ahead 1 week at the week 13 stream. We do have two teams going on by our last two buys of the season. Those belong to the Buccaneers and the Panthers. So we got Tom Brady, Teddy Bridgewater going on a bye here. And guys, really no shortage of solid options. All of these guys 40% or less rostered in a Yahoo League. So if you do need to stream a quarterback, you've got plenty of choices here this week. Jake, why don't you take your first crack at it here?
Brandon already anointed his new Derek Carr as Kirk Cousins. So that's right. He's done. I'll go, I would say, a little bit better, probably similar matchup. I'm going to go Phillip Rivers. Like, he's one that I think that we could have the same conversation about.
At Houston is the matchup there.
Yeah. Yeah, at Houston, Phillip Rivers has been Phillip Rivers of old. A couple of years ago, Phillip Rivers, where he used to be one of the most disrespected fantasy players, because all he would do is finish as he was averaging QB7 finish. It was just top 10, around 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 every single year, and nobody ever wanted Phillip Rivers. And I know that because I own Phillip Rivers year after year after year after year because of that. So it's going to be Phillip Rivers for me. I think he's in the same conversation as Kirk Cousins. And I'll tell you what, though, if Gardner Minshew is back, it's definitely Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a ton. Like you mentioned it, I would say definitely Kirk Cousins. I mean, but I'm looking at a list that you have here on our script. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Do we know it's going to be Ryan Fitzpatrick over Tua? Is Tua out for sure?
That injury
Miami
is
was
so
saying,
weird.
They were saying before that game that it could be a multi-week. I would assume it's going to be Fitz at this point. But again,
Nando brought this up now 3 weeks ago on the Thursday show that we do. And he said he missed practice and nobody's really talking about it. And we were certain, like, nobody was talking about it. And then last week it was like, oh, his hand's a little bit messed up. And it played, nothing, worried about it. And then all of a sudden it's like it's progressively going worse. And I don't know if this is an excuse to keep him out of the lineup or whatever, but it's a weird situation.
Yeah, most definitely. But if it's Fitzpatrick against the Bengals at home, I'm jumping on that one as well. So no shortage. I mean, God, even as bad as he was, I like Derek Carr against the Jets this week. Look, we got to say that this is an anomaly on his season, other than the monsoon against Cleveland or whatever. But I mean, there's just no shortage of guys you can plug in this week.
Brandon, really will you do a Derek Carr, Darren Waller DFS lineup?
Do it.
I will not. I live
run
in Washington, sorry.
Run it
I can't
back
do
with
it.
Frank Gore on the other side.
Oh, gosh.
All right, guys, let's take a look at our defenses to stream in week 13. Not quite as many good options that we have at the quarterback position. Brandon, do any of these teams jump out at you?
Not really, but honestly, with I'm looking at the Chargers at home against New England. That New England offense just doesn't put up points. Joey Bosa can make plays. We saw that against Buffalo. So I don't think the Chargers are a terrible option to plug and play.
Stop highlighting and unhighlighting.
Oh, sorry. You watching that? Sorry, that's just like doodling. That's doodling on the Google Doc. People don't understand. I'm on the Google Doc looking at the script, and I'm just like taking.
I'm
my
trying to read
and
them, and he keeps like it's like
highlighting
pink, unlike highlighted, highlighting pink, unhighlighted. Stop.
All right, were you able to focus so you could pick a team here, Jake?
Yeah, I could definitely pick a team here. I'd say it's not a great week, honestly. So yeah, what I'll go for is the team that could push it, and we talked about earlier. So as awful as Tennessee can be at times, I'll take the opportunity for some Baker interceptions.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, man. We're looking at a lot at this position, right? It's not necessarily the defense. It's like you're streaming against an offense more than you are streaming right. a defense in a lot of these situations. So that definitely has been a strategy that has paid off this season. Baker has been a little turnover prone, and that should be a game where a big game for both teams going into that. At 8-3, so a big spot for the Browns as they look like they're headed to the playoffs, and a big spot for fantasy owners headed into what is the final week of the regular season in most leagues. We are going to be here with you all week on the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast, getting you ready for your week 13 matchups, but we have to say goodbye for this episode. Our deal that started on Black Friday, a $1 per month subscription to The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/fantasyfootballpod and just follow the prompts from there. For Jake and Brandon, I am Michael Beller, Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast, back with you on Tuesday. Nando DeFino and Chris Vaccaro, the three of us, back with you on Wednesday to talk some Week 13 rankings. Until then, thanks so much for listening. Have a great day and enjoy Monday Night Football between the Eagles and the Seahawks, especially you, Brandon. We'll talk to you later.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.